Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the November NJEBA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask Tim to read the open public meeting notice, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon. Welcome, everybody. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could you call the roll?
Yes. Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Farlow.
Here.
Phil Elagia.
Here.
Virginia Bowers.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Maceo Ferrara.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Jewel Antoine Johnson.
Here.
Aaron Cruz from the Executive Branch.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Manuel Polino for Commissioner Zimmerman.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. I'd like to now ask for approval of the previous month's minutes. There's one set of meeting minutes for approval today. Before you are the minutes from the October 9th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. Just a reminder that I request board members state their names for the record when making a motion or a second. Thank you. Could I hear a motion to approve the October 9th board meeting minutes?
Fred Dumont motion.
Thank you, Fred. Ginny, second?
Happy to.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. Let me give a few brief chairman's remarks. First of all, good morning, good afternoon now, I guess. And thank you for joining us here today in Atlantic City for our November board meeting. We officially, unofficially, kick off the League of Municipalities meeting. And I also want to thank Stockton University for hosting us in this beautiful facility, and as some of us noted, one of the parking garages with the most spectacular views in the world of the Atlantic Ocean. We're gathering here in the city long described as America's playground, and that presents us an opportunity to reflect on Atlantic City's essential role in the state's culture and economy, with its iconic boardwalk, casinos, hotels, and the many jobs they create. Unfortunately, a city with so much to offer has experienced years of economic decline and underinvestment. Under the leadership of Governor Murphy and our CEO, Tim Sullivan, the NJEDA has made robust investments to ensure that residents of Atlantic City have an opportunity to grow and thrive. It's a testament to the authority and the administration's belief that the residents and businesses of Atlantic City have the potential for a very prosperous future. Later today, members of the NJEDA board and I will be participating in a bus tour of Atlantic City and its diverse neighborhoods, where we will see multiple projects that are supported by various NJEDA programs. We'll see projects that are receiving funding from the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program, which is supporting real estate development projects, including the rehabilitation of existing structures and new construction. Caring, Inc., an Atlantic City-based nonprofit, is one of the awardees that we will see on today's bus tour. Caring received a $2.6 million award through the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program to expand its office space and convert a vacant rooming house into a mixed-use office and short-term rental building. We will also be visiting the AtlanticCare Mobile Market and Healthy Food Pantry. Located along Atlantic Avenue, the Mobile Market is a grocery store on wheels and provides healthy meal items to community members in need of emergency food resources, as well as nutrition education and SNAP enrollment. AtlanticCare has received support from private foundations and the NJEDA's Atlantic City Food Security Grants Program. Since its inception in October 2023, the Atlantic City Food Security Grants Program has awarded nearly $6.3 million to improve food access challenges in Atlantic City. The Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation Program, better known as ARC, has awarded $11.3 million to Atlantic City since its inception. In December of 2023, the Atlantic City Arts Foundation was awarded nearly $250,000 for a public space activation project. This funding was used for artist stipends and oversight, as well as the purchase of supplies, materials, and the lift for the organization to complete restoration projects and produce high-quality murals and public art across the city. Through the new Historic Property Reinvestment Program, the NJEDA recently awarded $8 million in tax credits to redevelop the historic Schwemm Building in the Orange Loop District. After completion, this newly rehabilitated historic property will be home to 56 new residential units with amenities and commercial spaces. Programs such as these have been created with the intention of revitalizing historically underserved neighborhoods, building a strong foundation for future residents, and driving economic growth. I'm looking forward to the full bus tour later today and seeing examples of the EDA's hard work in Atlantic City. With that, I'll turn the meeting over to Tim for his CEO report.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to be with everybody today. Thanks to everyone for making the trip to Atlantic City. And want to extend an appreciation to Stock University for hosting us. When you think about evidence of the momentum and the investments that have been made in Atlantic City, Stockton's campus here stands second to none in terms of that evidence. I also want to congratulate Commissioner Saroangelo on joining the class of 2030 at Stockton. Your commitment to lifelong learning and training is evident. Never too early to start over. I know, Brian, you've got to go, so I might hand the microphone over to Brian Jackson from Stockton University, give us a quick overview of the campus, some of the things you guys have been working on, and then I'll come back with the bulk of my my comments. Thank you, Brian.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Good morning. My name is Brian Jackson. I serve as Vice President for Community Engagement here at Stockton University. So to Board Chair Mr. O'Toole, Mr. Sullivan, members of the board, and the community, I bring you greetings on behalf of President Joe Bertolino, our university president, who unfortunately was not able to be with us today. However, he sends his greetings to the NJEDA. So as many of you know, we opened the campus here in late summer of 2018 as a part of a $220 million Atlantic City Gateway project, which at the time was the largest public-private partnership deal in the history of the state of New Jersey. And that includes our 56,000 square foot John F. Scarborough Academic Center, which is across the street, our Kesselman Hall, which houses 533 students, and we're in that building currently. And we have an 800-plus space parking garage just adjacent to Kesselman Hall, which is anchored by South Jersey Industries headquarters and AtlanticCare, which has consumed our retail space on the first level of that building. The reception from the community and the demand that we've experienced for housing here in Atlantic City really exceeded our expectations, so much so that we opened an additional building just recently, which is a $69 million parkway residential building back in the fall of 2023. That facility is about 130,000 square feet and houses an additional 416 beds, providing us with close to 950 residential students here at the Atlantic City campus. So post-COVID, we are also entering a new time in the history of Stockton with significant changes within the university's senior leadership. As I mentioned before, President Joe Bertolino has been with us for roughly 15 months, in addition to our new Executive Vice President and Chief of Staff, Dr. Teresita Sass. We also recently hired a new Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs, Dr. Michael Palladino. He started back in May. And we also have an interim vice president for student affairs, Dr. Bill Latham. In addition, we've hired a new head of our human resources department, Dr. Craig Thickley. And just recently, it was announced that we will have a new interim vice president for enrollment management starting very soon. Moreover, nearly half of our university's board of trustees are newly appointed. So Stockton is primed for growth and change, and under this new leadership, President Joe has been outlining his plans for Stockton to be South Jersey's college of choice. The first step is really centered around focusing in developing a culture grounded in the ethic of care and a campus climate that is inclusive, supportive, participatory, and well-informed about our challenges, our opportunities, and the forces that are impacting Stockton, higher education, and New Jersey. This academic year, we embarked on a multi-step strategic planning process, which will assist Stockton in a better alignment of our short and long-term goals and resources. So what does the future hold for our Atlantic City campus? A presidential task force on Atlantic City expansion and an Atlantic City strategic plan that was facilitated by a working group, which I co-chaired, recently completed its reports, and the university is now working on a plan to implement some of those recommendations. In addition, our provost is co-chairing a strategic plan for the entire university. President Joe recently announced at his State of the University address that we are looking to make Atlantic City the home for graduate, professional, adult, and continuing education. As part of that process, we are considering potential growth in programs in business and graduate education, areas like our MBA, our MSW, and our EDD could see expansion. We are also exploring continuing education options that cater to working adults, as well as pre-professional programs that equip students for the workforce. And we are seeking to expand and enhance our community engagement, which supports our place as an anchor institution here in Atlantic City and the region. So in closing, we are incredibly grateful to the NJEDA for its ongoing collaborations and partnerships with Stockton and our community partners. And we seek to enhance our impact in the region. And we know that we'll be able to do that with your help. So we hope you enjoy your time here at Stockton Atlantic City. We appreciate you choosing us to hold your meeting this afternoon. And we thank you for your continued support of Stockton. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian. Brian, what's the size of the student population numbers?
We're currently around 9,600 students.
So 1,000 here live here.
We have about 1,000 students that are residing here. We have approximately a third of our students live on campus between Atlantic City and Galloway. Our residential population is about a third. We're about 8,600 students, not 9,600 students. So we're looking at how we are going to sort of resize ourselves as we move forward in terms of our enrollment. We're having conversations about how we're going to change the housing options here at Atlantic City as we look to bring more adults that are of age that can really enjoy all of it, what Atlantic City has to offer. And some of our younger students, where those services that they really need to support themselves are primarily housed at our Galloway campus. So that's all a part of our strategic planning initiative to kind of reset what the Atlantic City campus looks like and making sure that we can support our students to make sure that they're successful. You are.
I think I'll say when I was Google mapping my way over here too, and I wanted to check out where the entrance to the garage was, you know, for when I got into town. The map shows street view. When you're kind of pulling up onto Atlantic Ave, you could see the school. But for some reason, Google Maps, when you went past, I don't know if it was Lincoln, whatever the border.
Place.
Yeah, the the map was 10 years old. So I went to turn left to see if it was going to be on this side or that side of the parking garage, and there's nothing. All of a sudden, everything disappears. It's incredible. My point is to say it's incredible how this area has transformed just in that time. Because I stopped and I did a turnaround, you know, with my little person, and there's nothing. It's just fields and park, you know, like overgrown lots, and it's just impressive. And to have it be transformed into a place of learning and training for the future of the state, I think, and living, it's fantastic.
And we were able to build this campus without displacing any residents or businesses.
Yeah, really great. So, congratulations.
Thank you so much. And again, have a productive meeting today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Great. Well, a couple of things I just want to cover. You have my written CEO report, and want to click through a couple highlights since we were last together in Trenton. Right after our last board meeting, Tara, myself, Congressman McIver, Phil Elagi was there. We're together in West Orange with the governor for him to announce an additional $17 million of federal funding to the Child Care Facilities Program, which takes us over $140 million and fully funds all the eligible applications, or should fund, will, shall fund. All the eligible, I'm making sure Tara's got me fact checked here, all the applications eligible under that program. We think that makes us number three in the country behind California and Texas, both of which are many multiples bigger than us as states, for supporting the child care industry and the child care facilities infrastructure needs of the state. So huge appreciation to the governor for that continued support. I would also note for those focused on those issues, as I hope you all are, more than 300 registered contractors are working on that portfolio of projects all throughout the state, and that's more work than another $17 million worth of work for registered contractors coming down the pike over the next 6-9 months, something like that. So really exciting news, and again, a great announcement from the governor. We also announced, we talked about this at the policy committee. It hasn't come to this board yet for full approval, but we announced the signing of a term sheet with NJIT and NJII. So we're at one great New Jersey higher ed institution up north in Newark. There's NJIT and NJII, the New Jersey Innovation Institute. We announced our seventh Strategic Innovation Center project, which is really focused on advanced manufacturing and tech, broadly speaking. But again, a great example of partnering with higher ed, partnering with industry to drive the innovation economy forward, which we saw in Living Color, not NJIT, of course, but the notion of higher ed partnerships and collaboration on the Governor and First Lady's most recent overseas trip. I was able to join for the second half of it in the UK. We were in London and Cambridge. Cambridge in particular, if you could kind of wave a magic wand and hope for great things that happen between higher education and collaboration with industry, particularly life sciences, you'd replicate what's happening in Cambridge. So it was a great learning opportunity to visit that campus, as well as do some fintech-related things in London, and you know, continue to wave the flag for New Jersey. So a really good trip overall. One of the things that came up on that trip, since it was the governor got to London on Thursday, November 6th, I guess that was, 36 hours after we stopped counting the votes here in the country. A lot of discussion about federal transition and what the elections meant. Obviously, we've had an election since we last got together. As with any transition of a federal administration, there's certainly going to be some implications for us as an EDA, certainly for us as a state. The EDA gets federal funding for a number of programs, including our small business support programs, some of our clean energy programs, brownfield remediation, and, of course, the federal government's been an existential partner in the Biden-Harris years on offshore wind. And so that's something, you know, I think as Governor Murphy has indicated publicly, one, probably some rough sledding ahead, but he looks forward to making the case for why this is a potential enormous economic opportunity, not just for South Jersey, but for the entire country, why this is a huge opportunity for energy independence. But at the same time, we're also going to have to, you know, take a hard look at some of the things that we've done, like the offshore wind port, using the New Jersey wind port in Salem County, and make sure that we are appropriately risk managing and risk assessing what we need to be doing there. If there is a major shift in policy, we don't know what the future holds yet, but good news is we've been kind of drilling for that scenario basically since Orsted pulled out on Halloween of 2023, because the scenario was sort of came closer to reality then, and takes a click or two further journey to reality if certain promises are kept. And so we're gonna do exactly what I hope you'd expect us to do, which is be stewardly and thoughtful and prudent, keep both the short term and the long term in mind simultaneously, and do our best to to solve what will be a tricky puzzle. But it's certainly something that's on our mind and that we are focused on. And Liz and her team, by the way, have been great, as they are in all things, but particularly on this matter, great partners in thinking through options and what we can do and what we should do. I'll pause there because I'm going to do a little bit of AC and Ford dashboard stuff. Anything on wind? I have no opinions on the federal transition other than that. Other things that are on folks' mind? Report. Great. Two other things I'll just highlight. One, you have your board dashboard in your places here if you are a member of the board. You can see we're now north of $1.5 billion for year-to-date approvals through October, so this machine that we have built and you oversee so ably continues to rock and roll on lots of different fronts. This is just a smattering of some of the programs that are continuing to be active, including also on the tax credit issuance side. Shout out to Bruce and Grace is here. At least Patrizia, I'm sure, is listening in somewhere. You make approvals at these meetings. It is sometimes 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15, 18 years later where there are still certifications and issuances of tax credits happening. And so we've clicked past the $500 million of tax credit certifications this year under various different programs, the biggest of which is GROW, but also FILM is now really starting to generate tax credit certifications as well. And so that's going to continue to be an area that, again, we sort of the signal moment for these projects is when they come here and get approved, and then we have groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings and all that fun stuff, and then the hard work of certification and making sure that folks do what they said they were going to do, goes on for a decade or more. So that work continues to be incredibly important. It's something we're going to continue to focus on. Last thing I'll mention, and I'm not going to go through this in great detail, but you have at your places a bit of a Atlantic City 101. For those of you who have not spent a ton of time here, unlike undergraduate to be the king of Atlantic City, Rob Angelo. But you've got this is going to be basically the map and the narrative for the tour, so I'll let Christina and Paul do the hard work of narrating this, but you have a bit of an overview of the neighborhoods and where the places we've made investments as the EDA over the last, not just in this administration, but back to the prior administration, including this building and the surrounding campus that Brian was talking about, which dates back to Governor Christie's time, and is a great project that we're proud to be a part of. And so you've got a bit of an overview on AC here, which you got in advance as well, but just a bit of a table setter there. That. I'm also considering the bus tour part of my CEO report, so I'm trying to be mindful of time.
Great.
Are there any questions or concerns, observations?
Okay, hearing none, we will proceed. So the next item on the agenda is the public comment section. I will now open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'll ask Danielle Esser to share the NJEDA public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, which is available on the NJEDA website, members of the public will be acknowledged to speak first in person and then by phone. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. And now we'll go over the policy and process. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, and the topic remarks given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak. Limit. To matters pertaining to the authority, staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A speaker may speak once during the public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. Speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. I'd like to now acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment. I'm
muted.
Hello? Yeah, anyone in the room who would like to make a public comment? All right, seeing no one. Operator, can we go to the phone to see if anyone is on the phone to make a public comment?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please. And we have no questions. You may continue.
All right. Thank you, operator. We'll now move forward with the voting items on the agenda as we do at each board meeting. The committee reports will give brief remarks on committee chairs will give brief remarks on the committee meetings that occurred between board meetings. And I will begin with the policy committee report. The NJEDA Policy Committee met on November 4th and considered several items which are being presented for action today. Under community development, the staff presented a recommendation to approve the small business liquor license grant product, a pilot product under the Main Street Recovery Fund. Under authority matters, staff presented two items. One, a recommendation for adjustment of grant awards under the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation, or ART, program in Newark, and the hearing officer's recommendation for the declination of the Wequiac Park Association's application. Under economic transformation, staff presented amendments to the agreement regarding HACS LLC. Staff will present each item in detail as part of today's package before voting. So first up, under community development, Maggie Peters on the Small Business Liquor License Grant.
I think is the leader in the clubhouse who came the furthest to get here this morning, if I had to speculate. West, anyone can top Westwood, to Atlantic City?
Westwood, yes,
yeah.
Bergen County.
Yeah. That's the leader in the club. That's the leader.
Good afternoon. We are requesting approval for the creation of the Small Business Liquor License Grant, $10 million to capitalize the program from the Main Street Recovery Fund, and 5% of the funding, up to $500,000, to be used to cover NJEDA administrative expenses. The proposed Small Business Liquor License Grant is a pilot product under the Main Street Recovery Fund that would offer a 50% reimbursement, not to exceed $100,000, of the cost of a recently purchased New Jersey Inactive Plenary Retail Consumption Liquor License. We created this product to support the legislation Governor Murphy signed in January of 2024, increasing the number of available liquor licenses statewide by targeting inactive licenses and requiring that they be either reactivated, sold, or transferred to a contiguous municipality. These changes are expected to increase the accessibility of licenses by adding an estimated 1,350 inactive licenses back onto the market, which is a roughly 15% increase over the approximately 8,900 total active retail consumption licenses presently being utilized. This support would allow small businesses to expand their service offerings and increase their revenue. 40% of the program pool, or $4 million, would be reserved for applicant businesses located in eligible New Jersey Opportunity Zone census tracts. Opportunity Zone funding for this product would be set aside for 2 years from the date the application is made available to the public, and then any reserve funding that's not utilized, we would make it available to all applicants. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Is there a finite amount of Main Street Recovery Fund? And how much is left after this? Do we know that?
So we have 26.5 in total, and then we're going to take 10.5 for this product.
Got it. And is there a time that the need, you know, the deadline for deploying the funds?
8 months. So
no. Yeah. Okay.
Maggie, I have a question, and maybe it's not fair to ask because it's really more on the legislation. Not, I know we do the execution of the legislation, but has there been any pushback from businesses that currently have liquor licenses and feel, you know, betrayed that a new business would get, you know, some subsidy for this, and other small businesses had paid, you know, in some cases exorbitant fees to get these liquor licenses? Are we aware of that? Does it matter to us? I mean, is there anything we do to? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the path to get the piece of legislation that the governor signed in 2023 signed was pretty contentious for some of those issues that you identified. And the bill that the governor got to the governor's desk, I think, reflected a compromise, a consensus. I think it passed with big, huge numbers in both chambers. It candidly was not as sweeping as the original proposal, and that's part of why. As it relates to this, you know, we had sort of announced this a month, two or three months ago, and no one called me to fuss. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but
you might get
it may happen now. You never know. But I think certainly if this was to subsidize large national chain buying liquor licenses, I think I probably wouldn't have brought it before you, but it certainly wouldn't have been as popular. I mean, this is, think of a BYO place that can now sell liquor.
I'm just thinking, I think you know what I'm saying. There's other small businesses, other restaurants, mm-hmm. other establishments that paid, you know, just because my dad used to be in this business, I understand they paid a lot of money to get these liquor licenses, and then they find that, you know, and it was always challenging to get one. It just wasn't availability.
Yeah, this is sort of a new, this is a new crop. They're inactive, and it technically exists,
right.
but they'll be activated. They have the possibility to be activated because it's broadening the marketplace a little bit. So I think there's also broader liquidity, broader buyer pool, broader transferability of licenses makes for a little slightly
more
better
more
asset value. Yeah.
We also did speak to the Restaurant Association just to find out, you know, what the appetite for the product would be, and they were welcoming. They thought it would be a good addition.
Good. They would have. Okay.
Is this a new liquor license that they're introducing? Because a couple years back they had a question about the seasonal liquor license they want to expand it, because I'm up the shore there. I know there's a couple of bars over there really pushing to expand the seasonal liquor license. So this plenary retail, is that a new license that they're introducing, or this has been in for a while?
It's an existing license, and these are the inactive bunch. So they're really not new licenses. It's just putting a time frame on how they need to be activated somehow.
My memory from committee was it's sort of use it or lose it, right? If you
these
are inactive, people have been sitting on them, and the idea is to get they're either going to be granted or potentially you lose the license.
Right, you have two chances to do it. Yeah.
And you
sometimes they'll pocket licenses.
Yes.
And you work with the ABC on this.
Correct.
Do you have any idea what the average cost of a license is? Is there a
about $300,000 was what? Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. We know what the overall universe of possible options, given that it's 12 months in advance of the application date, do you know how many of these entities are even out there to even apply?
About 1,300.
Okay. The report had noted that we needed to suggest that we would do a disparity study to understand the need for already business owners. Do you know when?
I do not.
I don't either. I can get you an answer. We're also doing the 40% set aside for opportunity zone, which synthetically gets you pretty close to the same kind of answer.
Yeah,
This is Aisha. I have a couple of questions. Do we have a breakdown of where these licenses are currently located, and if those licenses will have to remain in that location?
So I don't have a breakdown, but we can certainly get it from ABC. We're still working because they're going to do all our checks on the back end as well. And typically they would have to stay, like, in the municipalities they're in unless there was a transfer. And that would be up to the municipality to transfer the license to a contiguous municipality only.
Got it. Also, I'm sure you're aware, like, there are third parties who facilitate the purchasing of these licenses. So I guess I'm curious, would the reimbursement go to those brokers who facilitate the purchase between the restaurant or whomever the end user is going to be and the existing license holder?
They would not. That would not be allowed under this product. They have to occupy, and there can be no common ownership.
Okay. It's just something to consider because there's a lot of brokers that buy up these licenses. And maybe it'll be a way to address that by only awarding the end user directly. And then is there any rationale for just targeting reactivations? Obviously, we don't want licenses kind of just sitting out there that are being unused, but is there any rationale as to, like, why just those 1,300 that are being targeted?
There's no opportunity to support other licenses because new licenses are not being created. These are just we're supporting the reactivations because there aren't any new.
And I should say, this was the crop of licenses sort of most directly impacted by the reform, the legislation that the governor signed. So this is kind of the piece that's moving around. Everything else is sort of static.
Got it. And then last thing, if the end user or the restaurant is in a location, are we asking them for a lease?
Yeah, we're asking for proof that they are occupying and that they're in that site, and then there's a 5-year compliance period, so they need to stay in that facility with a license in good standing to remain eligible. We check at the beginning, and then we check every year during those 5 years to make sure that they're the occupying entity and that they're still in good compliance with ABC.
Got it. My only recommendation then would just to be to make sure that it would where we have a broad definition of them occupying the space so they can have both leases or subleases.
Yeah, we would.
I know we have some other programs that are just leases only and not allowable for subleases.
Great, good question, and it's a really interesting program and an innovative, I think, approach overall to licenses. Any further discussions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it. Jenny Bell.
Thank you. Jenny, second?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks. I think next, before we go to the next item, Charles, do you want to give a brief update on the Real Estate Committee meeting?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone. The EDA Real Estate Committee met on October 31st to review and consider two items that are on the board agenda for this month. Staff presented a recommendation to approve the Local Property Acquisition Grant Program, application funding awards, and secondly, a recommendation for an early lease termination at the New Jersey Bio Center. Before I turn it back to the staff, Mr. Chairman, to present, at the Real Estate Committee meeting, I did indicate I had to recuse myself on the Greater Bergen Community Action Award under the Local Property Acquisition Grant Program, as they are a client of mine. Thanks, Chair.
So, Chairman and board members, I also have to recuse myself for the $4 million award to the City of Trenton as an employee, and I also worked on the application.
Great. Gabriel, will we – is this one vote or
– One vote for the local property acquisition grant.
Okay, and they'll just recuse from the vote.
Yeah.
Okay, we have enough members,
yeah.
Obviously. To, okay, great. So, on the local property acquisition grant program, Giancarlo –
Mr. Chairman, and good morning or good afternoon, board members. On behalf of the real estate team, I'm excited to present recommendations for grant awards under the Local Property Acquisition Grant Program for your consideration. In October 2023, the board approved the creation of this pilot program that seeks to provide $24 million in grant funding to municipalities, municipal entities, counties, county entities, and or not-for-profit local economic and community development entities in order to complete the often challenging acquisition of vacant sites, buildings, facilities, or a collection of properties so that future redevelopment of those properties can occur. Two funding products were available. $3 million was available for strategic public uses, such as pedestrian plazas, pocket parks, public parking lots, garages, or similar public spaces. This pot had a maximum of $1 million per project. The other pot included approximately $21 million for future development projects, which allowed for the acquisition of properties to be substantially rehabilitated and or for new construction of mixed-use, transit-oriented development, cultural arts, performing arts, commercial, manufacturing, industrial, or research or laboratory projects. A maximum of $4 million was available per project. The application launched in January 2024 with significant interest. An original May deadline was extended until mid-June to account for nearly 100 questions that were received from potential applicants. Thank you to the AG's office for their support on that. 41 applications were ultimately received. Prior to scoring, 6 applicants withdrew. 9 applications were deemed incomplete and were rejected without the right to appeal. 14 applications were declined due to non-discretionary reasons under delegated authority with the right to appeal, and the last 12 applications proceeded to scoring, where they all scored above the minimum needed to be considered for a funding award. One applicant, the Institute of Music for Children, has not provided an updated tax clearance certificate due to technical challenges with a login portal. However, we believe they've continued to make good faith efforts to address this, and as always, we will require a valid tax clearance prior to entering into a grant agreement. So we would ask the members to approve grant awards in the total amount of $1,660,050 to the local property acquisition strategic use project in your board packet. Grant awards in the total amount of $15,359,625 for future development projects in your board packet, and the cancellation of the reopening of the local property acquisition grant program using the remaining uncommitted funds allocated for this program until the authority works to determine a best use of the remaining funds. I thank you for your attention. Happy to answer any questions. And thank you, Hector, for putting
one editorial illustration. Pretty good geographic distribution regionally there.
Yeah. And again, just to be clear, so we authorized 25. We're granting 16-ish?
A little over 17.
And the balance we're going to hold until we determine whether we want to continue, essentially?
Yes, I would say it's pretty unlikely we come back for another round of this because we'll probably get oversubscribed quickly. This is part of a bucket of funding called something like real estate initiatives or real estate projects or something, which is delightfully flexible and could be used for a number of things that you know, could pop up. This is also state funding, not federal funding, so not a clock.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the grant awards, noting the two recusals? Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I'm on the board of Camden Repertory Theater.
Great.
Motion to approve.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. We were enough. We have a quorum, right? We're enough. Okay. Mm-hmm. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? We have three recusals. All right. The motion passes. Thank you. Next, Ginny, do you want to give a quick report on the Incentives Committee meeting?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. The Incentives Committee met on October 30th, and we have a number of items that are proceeding for board action. The first are two recommendations to issue tax credits for aspire, housing projects, one in Gloucester County and the other in Middlesex County. Staff also presented a request to approve a film tax credit program application and a digital media tax credit program application. Staff also presented a request to approve an update to delegation of authority for film and digital tax credit program and being able to reallocate the program allocation as needed. And then last, the staff presented a recommendation for delegation of authority for ERA products to approve administrative changes which would be needed. And that's it.
Thanks, Jenny. All right, the first item under this section is the West Deptford Apartments and Soldier on Veterans Village Aspire Award. Deirdre Malloy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The product team is seeking board approval to award $25,334,749 in Aspire tax credits for a 100% affordable age-restricted senior housing development. The project is located within the River Winds at West Deptford redevelopment area at 420 Grove Avenue in West Deptford, New Jersey, and will be named the Gordon H. Mansfield Veterans Seniors Village at West Deptford. Gordon Mansfield was a decorated veteran of the Vietnam War. He was severely wounded and left paralyzed from one of the battles. He was confirmed in November of 2003 to serve as Deputy Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and his term was from January 2004 to January of 2009. The applicant proposes the construction of a new four-story building featuring 84 residential rental apartments. The rendering on the left side shows that the site is not far from the Delaware River, bordering Pennsylvania. 42 units will be designated for veterans at or below 60% of area median income, including 28 units specifically for senior veterans. The remaining 42 units will accommodate seniors, which also includes veterans. Among the total units, 21 will be reserved for veterans with disabilities. The project meets the amended provisions set forth by the 2023 UHAC legislation as well. The unit distribution consists of 21 one-bedroom apartments at or below 30% area median income, and 50% area median income includes 21 units, and the remaining 42 units are at 60% of AMI. The rental units will have modern appliances and amenities, and all are designed as universally adaptable to support aging in place and independent living. The building also includes spaces for telehealth appointments, which are equipped to address doctor's visits and or special consultations, and private meeting spaces, along with case management. The project is owned by a single-purpose entity, West Deptford Apartments, LLC, an affiliate of Wynn Development Company, LP, which is the lead development entity. As is the case with most low-income housing tax credit finance deals, an investor member will enter the partnership at financial closing at 99.99% limited partnership, with West Deptford Apartments MM, the managing member, reverting to a 0.01% managing partner. The co-applicant for this project is Soldier on Veterans Village 9 LLC, also known as SOVV, and is a verified nonprofit 501c3. And the co-applicant will provide services to the project residents, such as life skills training, case management, wellness, and other health care services. They will also include comprehensive life skills curriculum specifically designed for veterans. The co-applicant, Soldier on Veterans Village 9, LLC will serve as the process of financial support related to the monetization of the Aspire tax credits, and that will be for the entire eligibility period. The board memo also provides greater details about that and the sales of the tax credits as well as ownership. Legal review and sister agency clearances was done on the applicant, the co-applicant, and all related entities, and each have cleared by the authority and other entities. The new building will comply with the NJHMFA Homes Program for Energy Star, as well as the multifamily new construction, which satisfies the NJEDA Green Buildings Standards. And the total development budget is $46,616,917. And to help size the award, we exclude prohibited costs by statute and program rules, and the eligible project cost after that is $42,224,581. The Aspire product also requires the applicant to contribute at least 20% of equity, and in this case, the developer is contributing $9 million, or rather it is required that he contribute $9,323,383, tongue-tied, pardon me, in contributing to the equity. And so, therefore, with the LIHTC as well as the developer fee, they are contributing $18,313,000, which is well above the requirement. And the sources table in the memo also detail that. And finally, we subject the applicant's request to programs, various awards, and caps, and the project is eligible to receive up to 60% of the total eligible cost, or $90 million, whichever is less. And in this case, we are recommending $25,334,749 for board approval. I want to also mention that since the project is receiving LIHTC, their deferred developer fee model is being used, which is satisfactory to HMFA, and the developer fee will not be fully realized until after stabilization, and that information is also within the memo. Construction will begin approximately February of 2025 and take about 24 months to construct. And with that, I will end my presentation with the request of the $25,334,749 for board approval, and happy to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Any questions? Jenny.
No question. I just want to say I think this is wonderful. I think anybody who serves this country deserves a decent place to live, and I'm happy to support this.
Yeah, I want to concur. We built one up in Tinton Falls, and the organization that is part of this is fantastic. I think the state should look to do more of this for veterans because, to me, we don't do enough for them, to tell you the truth. So I think it's a great project.
Any other?
No, I was going to say, to Robert's point, potential project looming at Fort Monmouth with this exact development. Appropriately enough, of course, given all the folks who served at the fort.
Anyone on the phone, comments or questions?
Let's move it. It's a great project.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Fred, you want to move it?
I make the motion.
All right. Second?
Robert Shimkin.
Thank you, Robert. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Deirdre, you want to do the second one?
Yes, thank you very much.
Get your bottle of water for afternoon.
I know, I was a little tongue-tied a little earlier, but I'm going to make it through this one. Okay, so for this particular project, Hoffman Housing Urban Renewal Associates, LLC, we are seeking approval for an award of up to $20,193,188 in Aspire tax credits for the project known as Hildebrand Commons, formerly known as Hoffman Pavilion, which will entail new construction of a 100% affordable senior housing development. The project is located at 75 Nielsen Street in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And on the bottom left side of the screen, where the parking lot is to the further side of the left is where the building will go. And then there's a rendering of what it will look like when constructed. The applicant is proposing a six-story senior building with 66 residential units that is currently a vacant lot, which can be seen, as I mentioned. The project consists of 60 one-bedroom units and 5 two-bedroom units and 1 superintendent unit. The units have affordability levels at 60% or less of AMI. The building site will also include 14 covered parking spaces for tenants, and there will be various amenities within the building in common areas as well. The board memo also provides a greater detail about the housing development, income affordability levels, and units, which includes low-income housing tax credits from New Jersey Housing Mortgage Finance Agency. The building will comply with the NJHMFA Energy Star Homes Program requirements and the Energy Star new construction, which satisfies the NJEDA green buildings requirements. The site is owned by New Brunswick Housing Authority, which entered a 50-year ground lease with the applicant that was executed in April of 2024. Penrose Holdings, LLC, whose parent company is Penrose, LLC, the lead developer for this project, is currently the sole member of Hoffman Housing Urban Renewal Associates, LLC. As is the case with most LIHTC finance transactions, an investor member will enter into the partnership at financial closing as a 99.99% limited partner and Penrose Holdings, LLC, will revert to a 0.01% general partner and assume the role of managing member. There is no co-applicant for this particular project. A legal review and sister agency clearances was done, and all entities cleared both checks. The total development budget is $36,336,378. And to help size the award, as previously mentioned but more detailed here, we exclude costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land, construction interest, various reserves, and operating expenses during lease-up. Therefore, the total project cost is $33,655,313. The developer, in this case, must also contribute 20% equity, which is about $7,267,276. And with LIHTC and the developer fee, deferred developer fee, rather, this equity far exceeds the amount that the developer contributed, and it's about $12,297,203. The memo also provides greater details about the sources and soft loans in the deal. And as always, we subject the applicant's request to the various programs, rules, and award caps. And in this case, this project is eligible to receive up to 60% of eligible costs, or $90 million, whichever is less. Because the project is receiving low LIHTC, the deferred developer fee model is mentioned, and I'll be specific here. This developer fee is $4,530,000, with $2,168,695 being deferred and not fully realized until the 15th year of operations after stabilization. And this, too, conforms with the HMFA policy. Based on the aforementioned factors, we are recommending an Aspire award of $20,193,188, which is well below the $90 million cap. If approved, this project will intend on being built somewhere at the start of the end of the year and ready for occupancy within 21 months after construction has completed. Thank you very much for listening. I'm happy to take any questions at this time. Yeah, see the lot to the left?
Okay, it's not the red dot.
Yeah, it's a parking lot right now. They use it for parking. Yeah. The dot is there because that's a New Brunswick project as well, and there's a street called Hildebrand Way within it, so I'm assuming Google just kind of mapped it to that, but it's actually on the vacant lot there.
That sounds like the map expert
down there. Treasurer and chief cartographer.
Our GPS expert.
Any questions?
Any questions in the room? Questions or comments? Any questions or comments on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it, Jenny Bell.
Thank you. Second?
Angela.
Thank you. Any further discussions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, it is approved. Thank you, Deirdre, for two presentations. I also note that if I'm right about this, according to our dashboard, this will make 23 Aspire awards with, you know, well over $2 billion awarded. So it's a pretty amazing program with a long way to go, hopefully.
Yeah. And thank you to the entire team and everyone that works with us as well. Thank you
very much,
everyone.
I think we're going to take we have a special guest. We're going to take a brief deviation from our agenda. Tim?
Yeah, sure. I have the pleasure of having with us Atlantic City Mayor Marty Small. Mayor, good to see you as always. I understand you might want to say hello to everybody. Thank you for having, and thanks for having us into Atlantic City. Good to see you, Mayor.
Yes, and good morning. It's a great day here in the city of Atlantic City. Can we say great day?
Great day.
Yes, great day. I'm Mayor Marty Small Singh. I'm mayor of the great city of Atlantic City. I would have found it robbery not to be here today and let this board know in person and those who are joining on the phone or on Zoom how much the EDA has supported the great city of Atlantic City. To just to be able to have conversations about development or supportive projects, not only during the hours, but after hours phone calls with, you know, Tim, you know, Ty Cooper, and the rest of the staff, Christina, and, you know, everyone that we deal here with in the great city of Atlantic City. I know I'm forgetting one person, but charge it to my head, not my heart. But this board approved $10 million between Atlantic City and North Arts Program. Realizing that they were all great projects, you eventually approved $26.75 million, and we're grateful for that. That's in addition to the revitalization funds here in the great city of Atlantic City that has spurred development. We're about to experience a boom, and we're looking forward to the Aspire program happening again. And not that I have you know, any interest, but I hear that there may be some more revitalization funds coming to Atlantic City. But we would definitely appreciate that. Tim, we appreciate and value your leadership, and I just wanted to come and tell you guys that you are truly making a difference, because without you, we wouldn't be experiencing the things that we're experiencing. I just wanted to publicly thank you. You know, on a board or an executive, all you hear from the people is criticism. Not that I know about that, but I wanted to come in and say thank you, and we appreciate you know, everything. And the last person I forgot was Diana Rogers, who all of those people who I mentioned has been extremely instrumental. And like I said, just to be able to pick up the phone after hours and talk shop, because it's important. So thank you again.
Thank you, Mayor. All right, thank you very much, Mayor. Next, we're going to the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. I think we have three items that Matt Sestrich will present.
Thank you, Chairman. Good afternoon. Good to see everybody. The members are asked to approve an update to the delegations of authority for the Film and Digital Media Program. Previous delegations of authority were approved back in April 2022. Which allowed the CEO or his delegate to approve film projects seeking $10 million or less, or digital media projects $3 million or less. This summer, PL 2024-C33, which was enacted in July 10, 2024, amended the film and digital media tax credit legislation, which allowed the authority to reallocate up to $100 million in available funds from the legacy film program to the digital media allocation category. Staff has seen a dramatic increase in activity under the digital media side, with over $65 million in approvals just this fiscal year, compared to just $33 million since the beginning of the program. Based on the existing queue of submitted projects, it's expected that the digital media funds will be oversubscribed before the end of this fiscal year. Additionally, the new statute, back in July, expanded the availability of digital media credits through a new post-production credit, which we expect will increase the demand for funding through the digital media credit for years to come. The request for a new delegation would allow the authority to reallocate funds from the film allocation bucket to the digital media bucket as needed to make each subsequent film or digital media approval. For example, if the digital media allocation bucket becomes fully exhausted under this new delegation, the authority could reallocate funds from the film bucket to the digital media bucket just to cover the amount needed to make the approval. Per the statute, the total amount of the reallocation in aggregate could not exceed $100 million. I'm happy to answer any questions that you guys have, but it's pretty straightforward reallocation.
This is a reallocation of existing funds.
Yeah.
How do we the film credits you film in New Jersey, digital, how do we ensure that this work is done in New Jersey?
I mean, it's all based on where they're located, so it's a lot of the wages is based on New Jersey gross income tax. Any of the vendor spend would have to be incurred in the state as well.
You'll get a real example in two items for state.
Great. Okay, any...
I was going to say, can you give like a layman's definition of digital media?
Yeah, I mean, of digital media?
For this program.
Yeah, overall it's pretty vague, statutorily, what digital media is. It's like any data, photos, videos incurred in the state. So we've seen a lot of activity through existing media folks in the state, like CNBC, who we're going to see in a second, and Audible doing audiobooks in the state. We've seen some digital advertising companies take advantage of it. But with the switch to post-production, we're likely going to see a lot of that money going towards post-production activity that happens in the state. Where currently a lot of film projects don't do post in the state, they jump the river to New York or in California where there's a lot of that existing infrastructure, and we're hoping that the post-production credit will boost that activity in the state.
We'll do this when we get to CNBC, but for example, it's their web content, it's
yeah.
their online content, it's not TV shows that in theory could be eligible for this TV credit, although live TV is almost never eligible for
And we would report with our quarterly delegations memo any reallocation of the funds.
Any further questions or comments? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could we hear approval for this delegation of authority? Could I hear a motion?
So moved, Farrar.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the delegation is approved. Next, we have two specific tax credits, right?
Yeah, we have one under the film side and one under the digital. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of two applications under the film and digital media tax credit program. One application is for film, the other is under the digital side. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets to make sure they're reasonable for industry standards, and all the film content has been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the recommended film approval is just over $10 million. The first application for consideration is Genus AE LLC, who is responsible for the production of Kiss of a Spider Woman. The project includes a 2% diversity bonus, and we're recommending an award of $10,896,173. On the digital side, members are asked to approve the application for CNBC LLC for their fiscal year 21 expenses. Based on the qualified digital media expenses of over $41 million, we are recommending an award of $12,329,545. Which also includes a 2% diversity bonus. Each project needs its own vote, but happy to answer any questions.
And again, these are formulaic in terms of their compliance with
yep.
the statute.
Yep.
Okay, why don't we'll do film first. This is Genus AE LLC. Could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it.
Second?
Robert Schicka.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none. The motion passes. Next is the digital media tax credit to CNBC LLC. Could I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none. It is passed. Thank you. Thanks, Matt.
3 minutes.
All right, next, delegation. Delegated authority on administrative changes to the ERA tax credit products. Susan. Good afternoon.
So my request is that the board delegate authority to the CEO to approve administrative changes to the Approved Economic Recovery Act tax credit products. That suite of products includes Emerge, Aspire, Film and Digital Media, Historic Property Reinvestment, Brownfield Redevelopment, Food Desert Relief Supermarket, and New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund. All of these products are currently launched, and we have many products under monitoring actively. Organizationally, the EDA has had a long history of monitoring similar products with quite a band of legacy products in our hold now. And staff determined that similar incentive delegations that exist to support legacy tax incentives would really be helpful in regard to ERA products. Examples of administrative changes include name changes, site identification updates, affiliate additions, and updates to reflect organizational changes in entities. We believe these delegations will allow us to increase efficiencies and respond more quickly to customers. Any questions I can answer for you?
Any questions? Anyone on the phone with questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it.
Thank you, Liz. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the delegated authority is approved. Thank you. Next, economic transformation. Tim Rolander on the phone, I believe.
Yep. Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Hey, Tim. Yep, we can.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today to present staff's recommendation for approval of an amendment to the HACS LLC agreement. The Board of the Authority approved a $25 million investment to form the HACS SIC in October 2021 and executed an agreement in November of that year to support the growth of hard tech companies, primarily in the clean tech space, with the launch of their U.S. headquarters in Newark that provides both investment and resources to companies to grow there. 3 years into the program, happy to share an update since inception along with our request today. The program has essentially created an estimated 140 jobs at portfolio companies in Newark, with additional jobs outside the city boundary but still in the state. They've hosted more than 15 events, including the Hackathon for local high school students, events for Newark Tech Week and demo days and more. In addition, their team's attending more than 30 events in Newark alone, so it's great to see them out and about. Companies operating in the space have raised approximately $75 million in equity funding to date, with additional capital in non-dilutive grant funding. So all in all, we're seeing some great things. For today's request, the HACS LLC agreement commits to investing in 100 businesses based in or relocating to New Jersey over a 5.5-year timeline, with a commitment to monitoring the relationship for a total of 8 years. EDA's commitment is to fund HACS's operations through their accomplishment of milestones. Among them, EDA will disperse $150,000 to HACS for every qualifying investment they make into companies, so long as SOSB/HACS demonstrates an average investment of at least $250,000 per company, which they exceed today. As of this memo, HACS has invested in 34 qualifying businesses relative to their run rate target of 40 at this point, 3 years into the initiative. HACS has seen delays investing as a result of construction to create their permanent facility on Broad Street and market slowdowns that they see are starting to abate and create more investment opportunities. So to help support the overall initiative, mitigate the chance of a stranded commitment, and generate the greatest opportunity of growth to new businesses in New Jersey, HACS has requested an amendment to modifying two aspects of their agreement, including the extension to the initial investment period by 2 years to allow disbursements from NJEDA through the end of year 8, which would be accompanied by an extension of the reporting period after the disbursement period as well, so it's effectively creating a 10-year total life. And second, consideration for alumni companies, those in which HACS invested after 2018 and prior to 2021, so long as they open a location in New Jersey and one of the founders moves to New Jersey. So based on the volume of engagement HACS has demonstrated to date and the investment run rate HACS has indicated lately, with the inclusion of alumni companies, staff is eager to support the amendment to facilitate greater activity from this long-term partner. So I'll reiterate the request for approval of the amendment and welcome questions, if any. Thank you very much.
Before we go to questions, one, HACS has been awesome, and it's one of our crown jewel projects and investments. Also, I'm looking at the picture of us cutting the ribbon in Newark and thinking back to sometime in the spring of 2021 when Aisha called me up and very friendly, very politely, very professionally said, "Hey, I saw your list of where you're pitching HACS. You must have inadvertently deleted Newark from the list." And she was 100% right, and there we are doing it in Newark. So amen, and thank you, Aisha.
Thank you, Tim.
Just how much of the $25 million have we dispersed to HACS to date?
About half.
Okay.
And that includes not only the company, but also some of the construction and fit-out milestones that I referenced before.
And we're just extending time and broadening the definition of a participant company, correct?
That's right. Yep, that's exactly it. Yeah, they saw a little bit of a slowdown. Some of the you know, I'll call them construction or project delays. A little bit of this, if you remember, was coming out of COVID when things were starting to loosen up a little bit. And then otherwise, yeah, you know, the idea is get these companies in New Jersey. you know, be they very, very early stage startups or be they something that has some experience, so long as the company plants a meaningful, not just plants a flag, but, you know, has a meaningful base of operations here in the state.
Okay, any further questions, comments, anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, got to hear a motion to approve the two amendments.
I'll move it.
Thank you. Second?
Aisha Glover, I'm second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the amendments are approved. Next to authority matters, Tim, on the ART program in Newark.
Great. Thank you, Chairman. I should flag up front, this would fall into the category of not our finest hour, but we've got a path forward here and a package of recommendations to, you know, get us to what I think is the right spot. But a bit of history and rewinding here. So, actually, Mayor Small mentioned, the ART program was originally conceived back in 2021, I believe, by Governor Murphy allocating $5 million to Atlantic City, $5 million to Newark. Subsequently, more money got allocated, but we'll leave that to the side for a moment. And within both Newark and Atlantic City, there were two categories, activations and catalytic real estate projects. So within those four categories of two places and two types of programs, this item is with regard to real estate projects in Newark. We had taken in a number of applications, and made some declines based on the scoring of a competitive program that had been administered. We received two appeals. Of those scoring, the two that are that issued appeals are in yellow up on the screen of Green Willy Wings LLC and Weequahic Park Association. We're going to hear about number two in a moment. In the context of adjudicating the appeal for Uncle Willy Green Wings, it was determined that we had some scoring errors in how we had scored. By the way, the board had approved the original scoring, and we, you know, issued, you know, notice of approval to the winning applicants, including Equal Space, and that'll be relevant in a moment. Came to our attention via an internal review that we had some scoring errors. The relevant projects were rescored, and their rescored averages are there on the left. Generally speaking, it was a couple of changes, but nothing materially impacting the outcome, with a couple of exceptions. One, Uncle Willie jumped ahead. Uncle Willie Green Wings jumped ahead of what had been number eight, which was Equal Space. I think we'll get to number 10 in a moment that's recommended to uphold the staff's original determination to disqualify them. So we'll get to that one separately in a moment. But then also Equal Space lost some points and fell below Uncle Willie. So not only was the applicant who made an appeal had a pretty good leg to stand on, it also knocked down Equal Space. Equal Space had already been approved by the board and been notified of their award, so, you know, a bit of egg on our face here. The two recommendations outlined in the memo, there's several, but the two most meaningful recommendations out in the memo were, one, or to award funding to Uncle Willie Green Wings and essentially make that appeal moot by awarding them an incremental $704,742 from a separate pot of money. It's actually the real estate pot of money that we talked about earlier in the context of the property acquisition program, and to allow Equal Space to remain an awardee even though they lost some points. It's still a really, really strong project. We had extended to them the notification that they were going to be an awardee. We'd probably have some legal challenges to unwind that if we wanted to, but given that we have funding available to solve the problem, our recommendation would be to do so. Should just note for anyone scoring at home, obviously we're getting to the bottom of how the scoring error came about. I don't have a definitive answer for you yet, but to the extent there are, you know, corrective actions we need to take vis-a-vis that, we will take them. Nothing to announce today, nothing probably that rises to board level anyway, but something we're taking seriously, as I expect you would expect. I'm going to let Christina, who is much closer to the projects, tell us a little bit about Uncle Willie Green Wings, just to make sure you know what you're being asked to consider approving. We went through all these projects in detail back in February when we approved them the first time.
And Tim, sure. And for context, right, the board in September heard in-person appeals from people related to this program?
Timing questions.
Because they hadn't received their funds. Right?
Outstanding items, issues here.
And the people who got moved down were there in person.
Yes, they were. Right. Yes, they were.
But the scoring that you have, great. I mean, right? The variance between where we screwed up and where we acted.
For eight of the nine of them, yes. Number nine moved a bit, but still kept it within, it's still above the minimum we said required to
fund the program. 65 was the minimum, right, Christina, or 70?
65.
65 was the minimum score, we said.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Uncle Willie's Green Wings, LLC. This awardee will be doing a renovation to, they have a current operation, Uncle Willie's Bar.
I'm sorry. Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Sure. Let me get the mic.
Thank you.
So the awardee, is that better? Can you hear me? I'm going to assume so. The
awardee yes,
is
thank
Uncle
you.
Willie's Green Wing, LLC, and will be doing a business as Uncle Willie's Bar and Grill. Walter Green is the current owner and operator of this popular dining option in Newark area and has been serving the community since 2019. He's looking to expand his footprint in downtown Newark by transforming 113 Halsey Street, which is currently the space that will offer community gatherings, foster a creative atmosphere, including a bar, restaurant, and speakeasy, so live performances like open mic nights, poetry readings, and artist events can happen in the downtown. This project will hope to help tie the community and attract more people into the space so they can feel a sense of community in their downtown Newark. And it will be branded as church. And, yes, two U's are supposed to be there. So I just want to put that in there. We verified also they have the additional funds to move the project forward. So because it is a federal program, there shouldn't be any time restraints associated to this. Prevailing wage, everything has been secured as well, too. So.
You have a rendering of picture?
Next. That's what the future space will look like, and then the next slide shows what it looks like today.
Okay. So this motion is to approve the adjustment of the award as indicated, adding Uncle Willie's and also funding space.
Equal space.
Equal space.
Continuing, essentially allowing them to remain approved and adding some additional funding to that.
Which requires the transfer of a little bit of funds from real estate to this project.
Correct. $741,741.
And which we are able to do.
Yes. Assuming you vote for it. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Any further questions? On the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to recuse. We have a grant into Equal Space.
Great. Thanks, Aisha. Noted. The motion is approved. Thank you. All right, next, Monica, the ART Program Phase 1 hearing officer recommendation on the declination of Wequiac Park.
So this matter is an appeal of a declination for the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation Program. As we just discussed a little bit, there was a Newark component to the program, which had a real estate program and a public space activation program. So Wequiac Park Association applied for the real estate program in last August of 2023. Just by way of a little bit of background, the applications were scored by three scorers on a scale of 1 to 100 with a minimum score of 65 to qualify for a grant. The criteria were split into three groups. The first one was project qualifications. The second was background information related to the property, project, and end use. And the third was project readiness and programmatic considerations. For the real estate program, EDA scored 13 applications and 8 were recommended to board for an award. The remaining 5 applications were recommended for declination. Of those 5, 2 had failed to meet the minimum score of 65, and one of those 2 was Wequiac Park Association, who received a score of 57.7. For a little bit of background, Wequiac's proposed project was the Wequiac Lake Boathouse Reconstruction and Development Project, which would have included the construction of a new boathouse, which would house a recreation hub, classrooms, restroom facilities, and a cafe. Wequiac's declination letter stated that it was declined because it failed to meet the minimum score and was not selected by vote of the board. Wequiac appealed, expressing, among other things, concern of potential bias on the part of a board member toward their application and project, and noting that the authority focused on the downtown Newark area. A second declination letter was issued to clarify the decline, explaining that Wequiac did not receive a grant because it did not meet the minimum score. Wequiac appealed again, highlighting its strengths as an organization and the benefits of its proposed project, but did not address its score in its appeal.
At that point, I reviewed the appeal and the score sheets and identified issues with certain criteria, as we just went over a bit. As a result of that, the 8 art applications that had been awarded funding and the 2 that were declined were all rescored. Weekwake was informed that the appeal would be put on hold while the rescoring took place. After the rescores, Weekwake's score went down a bit to 54.7, which still failed to meet the minimum score of 65. The recommendation to decline their application was reaffirmed, and Weekwake was informed of that determination. Although Weekwake's legal position did not change, they did not meet the minimum score either before or after the rescoring. They were given an opportunity to provide a written response to the rescoring. In it, they reiterated that their project aligns with the art program's objectives and that similarly situated applicants were awarded funding. A few things of note were that their response referenced their original score of 57.7 rather than their rescore of 54.7, and it discussed some of the criteria that had applied to the public space activation component of the program rather than the real estate program. For Weekwake's appeal to succeed, they must show that EZA acted arbitrarily, capriciously, unreasonably, or against the great weight of evidence. In this case, they did not. At the outset, to address the argument in their first appeal about the potential bias of a board member, we would note that the board members had no involvement in scoring here. The applications were scored by a committee of 3 EDA staff members, and applications were recommended for approval or declination based on those scores. Regarding scores, although Weekwake did not specifically address their scores in their appeal or repeal response, I reviewed the score sheets and the rescore sheets, and I did not find any irregularities aside from those that were noted and addressed in the rescore. For this program, as discussed, each of the applicants were rescored during the pendency of the appeal, which further ensured that the scores were consistent not only with the board's memorandum approving the art program, but also among all of the art program applicants. Based on all of these reasons, I've concluded that the board's declination of Weekwake's application was proper and should be upheld. And we would also note that we did provide Weekwake with a copy of this recommendation and an opportunity to respond with final comments, and they did not.
Any questions? Comments? Questions on the phone? Okay, so we're taking a vote to adopt the hearing officer's recommendation to uphold the declination.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Got to hear a motion for such approval.
So moved, Angela.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the decision is affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next I just want to make a comment for those of you following at home that there is an item called the Asset Activation Planning Grant that has been withdrawn. So the next item on the agenda is from Brian Keenan, who will present on Dohler USA, the recommendation on an early lease termination from the Bioscience Center.
Hello. Hello, I'm Brian Keenan, Senior Project Officer here at the EDA. And this is EDA's success story disguised as an early lease termination. So the Bioscience Center is, New Jersey Bioscience Center is owned and operated by the EDA. Dohler USA has been a tenant there for 2 years, and because of the good work of EDA, they have outgrown their space. They initially had 20 employees, now they're at 37, and they're looking to grow their business to 100 employees, and they need to double their square footage that they're in now. Unfortunately, we can't accommodate them at NJBC just simply because of the size and we don't have the space. They did identify a space and purchase it in Princeton to further make their investment in the state of New Jersey, and they'll be growing their employee base to 100 people. They asked for an 8-month early termination. We negotiated it down to a 4-month early termination. While we are good landlords, we're not that good. We do need revenue to operate the space. So we're asking you, I'm asking you for the approval of a 4-month early lease termination for Dohler USA LLC, which will result in a $137,000 operating loss to the Bioscience Center. We are in negotiations now to release the space. I do not have a signed term sheet yet, but we are in negotiations for another tenant who's currently in our incubator space at the Bioscience Center. We will still have a loss because there'll be a four-month gap, but we would have had that loss regardless because we still have to prep the space, release the space, so we're just affecting that loss earlier.
Is this one of the small labs in the building, or is this across the street in the bigger labs?
It's across the street in one of the bigger labs.
In the more modern building?
Yes.
Good news.
It is good news. Yes. It's just disguised as an operate as a loss.
Yeah, just losing money.
Yes.
Do we have any warrants or anything in the company? No? Okay, any further questions? Comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? So could I hear a motion to approve the four-month early lease termination?
I'll move it. Thanks.
Second?
Aye.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none.
Thank you.
Is approved. Thank you. Tim, a board memoranda.
Yeah, I'll be brief. You have eight delegated authority board memos in your packs. I will go through each one of them line by line now. That's for Danielle, I guess. The only person who found that charming at all was Danielle. Thank you, Danielle. Please shut up now. But I won't, in fact, go through them all. But a couple highlights. First of all, as you continue to give us the privilege of more delegated authority, you'll see more memos. And so you should expect steady delight of these along the way. Couple things just to highlight. Again, the delegated authority memos and the board dashboard, I think, both speak to the same theme, which is a lot obviously happens at these meetings and a lot happens in between them as well. At the staff level, including, for example, under the Angel Tax Credit Program, 87 different tax credit investor applications for a little more than 20 different businesses being supported, 15 different film tax credit applications, almost $40 million of funding that happened at a much more rapid clip because we don't have to go through the time to come to the board, which matters a lot from the client perspective, the customer perspective, which we hear, Kathleen and I hear this all the time, how important turn times are. Obviously, it still requires us to do all of our due diligence, all of our homework, all the things we would do to recommend them to you, but we don't have to go through the committee process and the other processes, so it speeds them up. So, again, we'll continue to provide lots of reporting on all of our delegated authority responsibilities, and there's eight of them this month if anyone has any questions.
Okay, any further business? I do want to take a moment and thank Danielle and Manure and the entire staff for preparing us. I know we were getting memos late on a Sunday afternoon, so thank you. We promise we won't do another Monday board meeting soon. Any further discussion? Anyone on the phone? Could I hear a motion to adjourn? Second? Anyone opposed? Okay, hearing none, the meeting is concluded. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.